Welcome to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. The Madison Symphony has their first concert of the season this weekend. Three concerts, as usual, on a Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. And the program features three works. They are by Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and Copland. And the Beethoven is the Leonore Overture No. 3. I think we'll get into that a little bit. And also the Fourth Symphony of Tchaikovsky and then the Aaron Copland Clarinet Concerto. And the clarinetist for the occasion is going to be Joe Morris, who's with the Madison Symphony. And also on hand, to say the least, will be Maestro John Demain, who's over at the piano. They're going to be illustrating some highlights from the concert coming up. And welcome back to the Midday, both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you back with us. So let me ask you first, John Demain, as far as choosing the Copland Clarinet Concerto. Now, I know you've got this dazzling young clarinetist with the orchestra. That was obviously the main reason for choosing this piece. Was there another?
Sure. The orchestra's never done it.
Oh, no kidding.
At least, you know, I mean, Michael Olson started recording our programs, keeping an archive from about 1984. So and the piece premiered in 1950. So, I mean, I would not know prior to 1984, but certainly in our time, this orchestra's never played this piece. And so I thought, you know, we've done the Mozart clarinet concerto. There's other clarinet concertos that we haven't done, but I thought this would be exciting. You know, our audience has a big love affair with Copland, and so what American doesn't? And so it was just a chance to combine both.
Joe, I assume you've played this concerto many times.
I have, but never with orchestra.
Oh really?
Yeah,
just with a piano.
I've always done it as a competition piece or even as a recital or audition for college type of work. And while I've gotten to do a great number of the clarinet concertos with the orchestra, this is kind of the last one on my real bucket list to get to perform with a group. Part of the reason is it's so incredibly difficult for the orchestra. And so anytime I've gotten to choose, sometimes you have to tailor things dependent on the level of the ensemble you're working with. But I'm lucky enough to get to do this with my very own Madison Symphony, who are more than capable of handling such a difficult piece.
When you say it's difficult, and you were talking about Copland, the first thing I think of is those shifting rhythms. But is there more than that going on?
Well, yeah, I think of this there is. You know, this piece is written for piano and harp and strings. And strings, of course, carry the bulk of it. And the first movement is very, very much like Erik Satie, which I think we're going to play some of that for you. It's what it reminds me of. Doesn't it remind you
really?
Of Satie?
Oh, definitely.
You know, and then the second movement, of course, is extremely jazzy. And it calls for, you know, the large group of strings to play complicated rhythms and also huge leaps for the strings. There is just some, you know, they got to go way up there and be accurate. And there's some, but I think you just have to have the time to put the piece together. And then when you have a good orchestra, you know, once they figure it out, then it's fine. But there's no question it's really challenging.
It's going okay then? It's going okay?
Oh, well, what is today? Thursday, right?
Yeah.
So far, we get a chance to do it again tonight, but we felt pretty good about it last night.
Great. Well, I know you have some highlights prepared here or some excerpts in general. It's
right.
Hard to say what would be the highlights, but you were talking about, I think, the first movement that
just the last
play.
Moment you can't play on the piano. It's just, it would be a
we'll
mess.
We'll let you off.
But also it gives us a chance to hear Joe's beautiful sound, and it's a gorgeous first movement, just to die for first movement.
So this is a section from it?
This is it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Beginning for a clarinet concerto by Aaron Copland. It does have, even in the reduction. It does have some of Copland's fingerprints, though, doesn't it? That style.
Yeah, the big open.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the open prairie kind of feel to it.
Open voicings that he uses, you know, which creates that sound. But it's an unusual way to do a concerto. Then what follows, of course, is a big, wild cadenza and then this jazzy last movement.
And Joe, having performed it now with an orchestra in rehearsal so far, now I realize you would have heard recordings and all this, but you've never actually played it with an orchestra till now. Anything in particular come out?
The big highlight of playing this piece with the orchestra is really the second movement because of the colors that and different styles that he's able to bring out of the string section. And I think I find it a little bit easier with the full orchestra than with the piano that I've ever done it with before. Rhythmically, it's really nice to have such a large group and body of people to, you know, lay it down behind you. That's been the biggest thing noticing. That and just having to play really loud in order to project over the whole group. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, interesting point. We mentioned earlier this cadenza. Is that something you're rested up enough now to play?
Sure. Well, it's funny because a lot of people talk about how this piece sometimes sounds like a sort of a battle between Aaron Copland in his style and Benny Goodman in his style, because obviously it was written for Goodman, Benny, who premiered it. And it's interesting, this cadenza, my wife and I get into an argument over where the first moment of Goodman starts, because cadenza really starts with very similar to the first movement, these very placid lyrical phrases, and it very slowly kind of transforms into something that's obviously much more jazzy and raucous. And the interesting thing for me is where that transition really takes place. So yeah, I'd be happy to play the cadenza for you.
You know, what's interesting about this cadenza, which is very unusual because it's all backwards, and he's introducing all the material that you're going to hear in the last movement in the cadenza.
That is unusual.
You know, and then we're going to play this, with you know, various kinds of beats underneath it. But it's interesting he's introduced all the material first, as opposed to you playing it with the orchestra first and then having a cadenza at the end of the movement,
right,
and then doing a riff on the themes. So he really broke some traditions there.
Well, writing a clarinet concerto for Benny Goodman, yeah, you would expect that he would do something a little different. And I think Goodman obviously recorded this.
Oh, many times.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah,
and it was adjusted, you know, right? I mean, there were things that Copland thought he heard Benny Goodman do, so he thought he could write certain passages. And then, you know, Copland said, sure, you know, maybe in a recording studio, but not live.
Right. Yeah, there are a few. The first thing is there's a note in the cadenza that originally goes up to a high, double high C sharp, which is bordering on extended technique. And not a lot of people do that. But the real difficulty is the last two pages of the written clarinet part. He originally wrote this ridiculous series of notes for the clarinet that I think has been recorded maybe by two people. It's covered in the piano now. And I think Copland claimed that he had heard Goodman do it with his band, that series of notes at some point in a performance. And but Goodman was, and most clarinet players are not anywhere near capable of getting all of them.
So Goodman said, no, you didn't hear me do that?
Yeah, and well, now there's a simplified version that's much more standard and typically done. So,
well, something to look forward to with all those influences ranging from Satie to Benny Goodman. That's quite a range there. I mentioned also on this concert with the Copland Clarinet Concerto, Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. Let's see, John, is that Fate? coming through in a motif repeatedly.
Well, that fact, you know, and it's interesting because, like any great composer, in this thing, you know, so we get that theme, but this yadam pa bum pa yadam. When we, you know, after he calms this fate thing down, clarinet plays this. He uses this rhythm. And then you have that waltz that establishes the first movement. So and that the idea of the repeated notes of the fate movement serve as an accompaniment, and of course he keeps coming back to it, and after we go through this whole symphony, at the very end he comes back to that fate movement again, but the piece triumphs over that because the piece ends quite exhilarating and ecstatic, you know, at the ending.
Does he have did you mention a waltz? Did I hear you mention a waltz?
Well, I'm just saying this rhythm. 1 2 3 2 2 3 3 2 3 1 2 3 2 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 3 and he says in the thing next to Moderato con Anima, in movimento di valse.
Oh.
So he wants that tempo to have that sort of metronome 60 that is the basis of a waltz, and then it takes off from there.
And we know that Tchaikovsky loves his waltzes. I mean, he's got one in his opera, Eugene Onegin. He's got one in the Fifth Symphony, not to mention the ballets.
You know, I think there's a combination of waltzes and then sort of folk melodies. I think that the second movement has a really beautiful melody that the oboe plays to start out the movement. You know, this... page turned here. when he goes to the next part after, I'm always fascinated by. Everything's always doubled. You know, you have all of these octaves. Which gives it that dark. I think that's part of what gives the Russian sound. Even that first movement, the first movement in the same way is filled with the same kind of octave. Huge doublings where the whole orchestra is playing, you know, bum, bum. It's just the whole orchestra is in octaves all night long. So it's like it's almost like, you know.
Yeah, right.
But he has, and I think that creates a darkness to the piece. And then the other thing, of course, is in that exhilarating last moment, he then turns around and gives you an absolutely a second theme that's right out of a folk tune. Now, the other thing is, notice that he doesn't do it this way. He doesn't go. But he keeps that pedal point.
Lingers.
I always think that's a tradition. You know, that's a kind of Russian thing to do, and that keeping that pedal and having that plaintive feeling against it. And so he juxtaposes that exhilarating last movement with this sort of distinctly Russian, and it always has a tinge of sadness. You know, in this minor key, that waltz in the first movement, the second movement, and the third movement when he has the pizzicato, that gets happy, right? You know? And the last movement has the combination of and then this, and then he weaves the two of them together, and then suddenly in the middle of it all is comes back.
Fate comes back, yes.
And then a big ending. The audiences love that. Nothing, I mean, Tchaikovsky could really whip up the orchestra into a lather.
Well, he did have a sense of showbiz, didn't he? And theater. Well, thanks for coming in and sharing some of these insights into this program for the upcoming concert of the Madison Symphony. The concert will begin with Beethoven's Lenore Overture No. 3, and then you'll have the Copland Clarinet Concerto with Joe Morris, and then Tchaikovsky's fateful but triumphal Fourth Symphony, John Demain. Joe Morris, a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Norman.